wood.
The black branches of a mangrove tree.
The nightingale.
Ever since primitive man designed the first spear, people have been fashioning objects from wood.
Wood is alive.
Defects in the timber are coming through the paintwork.
Jasmine, heavy on the night air.
We've got a couple of western hemlocks. There's Douglas fir. There's a Sitka spruce that I can see.
Grain, knots, growth lines.
Natural art, that's what it is.
And weathering over time.
Once upon a time.
The sassafras.
The pleasures of timber.
Celery top pine.
For people who live on the river, they would want some sort of wood that's going to be nice and tough for them to do things. And I reckon the mulga and the gidgee wood.
The night air.
A sweet, woody funk.
Breathe it in.
Hi, welcome to The Night Air on ABC Radio National. I'm Brent Clough. And this evening, we're whittling away at the knots, grains, and other aesthetic pleasures of wood.
Burning debris, like leaves and bark flying through the air.
Four or six timbers meeting in different directions at once.
Kingbilly pine and myrtle are also...
Common name, hooked mallee.
Underneath the apple tree.
We'll climb a 70-metre-high giant redwood named Goliath, and we'll stay the night in its branches. We're going to meet the people who work with the material as their life's passion, and we'll discover how Aboriginal trading of wood stretched from South Australia to the top end. This is our tribute to the fibrous substance used so widely for so long. And touch wood, you're going to enjoy it.
The love of field and coppice, of green shaded lanes, of ordered woods and gardens is running in your veins.
There's something unattractive, unhealthy even, about Eucalyptus desertorum. It's more like a bush than a tree. Has hardly a trunk at all, just several stems sprouting at ground level, stunted and itchy looking.
I'm listening to the waves in the night air.
When we first came to climb this tree, me and a couple of mates, the first thing that strikes you is just how big the tree is, and so... rather unoriginally, we called it Goliath, but I think that suits. It's just so ridiculously big. I'm just walking up to the base of it now. It's got very thick, fibrous, spongy bark. It's growing in the most improbable place. It's in the middle of an oak woodland, so it's at least 100 feet taller than any of the surrounding trees. And this is the tree I'm going to climb today, and it's a wonderful thing.
Andrew's a wood artist. He makes freeform sculptures, mostly in red gum.
This is shed in irregular patches, leaving small dimples, hence spotted gum. And as the bark surface ages, it changes colour from cream to blue-grey, pink or red, giving a mottled appearance. The trunk is generally erect and symmetrical.
And when we got down there, it was a Jock Muir's yard, and, you know, those yards had a smell about them, depending on what timbers they were using, whether it was hewn with its aromatic fragrance or King Billy with that wonderful sweetness.
What do you got there?
It's the Congreve Cube. It's supposed to help me unlock some great mystery or something.
Looks like a block of wood.
It is.
These pieces aren't turned on a lathe or glued in place. Instead, Andrew twists and shapes sections of wood while they're wet. And what results is sculptural forms that reveal the grain of the timber, as well as the tree's history, growth rings, even insect trails.
Are you supposed to unlock a mystery with a block of wood?
It's a magical block of wood, Newton. It's a block of wood that probably in the right hands would reveal some greatness that we can't even imagine.
It's impossible.
At times, the value of wood does not lie in its strength or load-bearing qualities. Wood's visual qualities, grain, knots, growth lines, and weathering over time, can enrich a building aesthetically. Architects working with wood have in common their fascination with the richness, the texture, the strength of wood to enhance their creations. Even small spaces can be maximized by combining natural light with the warm, sophisticated quality of wood glowing throughout. Wood is alive, and a home built from it ultimately becomes a paradigmatic connection between architecture and life.
I helped plant those trees, leaving them to face the wind and the heat when they were not ready. Summer had come too early for them. If September had remained where it was supposed to in spring, they would have lived. It felt like I'd asked too much of a child, and they had not coped and had been damaged by the experience. It was that sort of guilt.
Giant redwood, or Wellingtonia as it's sometimes known, or Sequoia dendron giganteum, which is a bit of a mouthful, but that's the botanical name for it, is an amazing tree, a tree of great stature. It stands head and shoulders above any other tree in the forest.
We could go on forever holding up favourites or returning to botanical names which possess almost the right resonance or offer some sort of summary, whereas all that's needed, aside from a beginning itself, is a eucalypt independent of, yet one which... Oh, it doesn't really matter.
It stands head and shoulders above any other tree in the forest. It has this very cone-like shape to it, almost a pyramid, and it splays out of the bottom, but goes right up gun barrel straight, sometimes up to almost 200 feet tall.
Certain eucalypts were rare because they rarely took root beyond a narrow radius. They were sensitive to drainage, lime in the soil, degrees of frost, elevation, rainfall, and God knows what. Some stubbornly refused to grow in the month of March, others the week after Christmas. One tree would thrive in the shade of another, another would not. They were hypochondriacs, demanding esoteric manures and watering by hand.
That tree will never die. None of these trees will never die.
Trees, trees, grow and grow. Cover the castle from top to toe. Trees, trees, green and brown. Nobody ever will chop you down.
Turn the page.
The biggest giant redwood is in California, and it's one called the General Sherman tree. And it is an astonishing size. In height, it's about 275 feet tall. Its circumference at ground level is over 100 feet, 100 feet round, with a diameter across of 36 feet. Astonishing thing. And it's actually got about 52,000 cubic feet of timber within it. And that's based just on the main stem. That doesn't take into account any of the branches. And some of these branches themselves can have a diameter which can be 8 feet across. When you add that in, you've got about double that amount of cubic metres, so over 100,000 cubic feet of timber within this one tree. And there are others, there's about a dozen of them, all around that sort of size. And they are the biggest living organisms on Earth.
Once it's seasoned and shrunk, it becomes really a different material altogether, and I've used hardwoods predominantly ever since. I think they're magnificent, and they're very different depending on what job you want them to do.
Current thinking has wood as a renewable natural resource of unlimited supply. Pressure from the ecology sectors has led to ever more computerised and automated systems of cutting and wood transformations. This, in turn, has afforded countless products that are made from wood byproducts, thus optimising the use of this natural resource.
So there's just one thing left to do, and that's to climb it. And for that, I need to get a rope up. And that's easier said than done. What I'm looking for is a really solid, bomb-proof top anchor, a nice big beefy branch that I could literally trust my life to.
The black branches of a mangrove tree. Jasmine, heavy on the night air.
Okay, so that's my first rope up into the tree. Just having a little swing on it. Just to make sure that the branches are strong enough.
Yeah, they're fine. Just got to untie the throw line now.
And then I'm ready to climb. And the plan is to stay up there tonight. I mean, the afternoon's wearing on, so it'd be quite nice to bed down in a hammock, sleep the night in the canopy, and then go to the top in time for sunrise. It should be quite a view.
Turn the page and the record.
The wood on these trees, on these redwoods, is really brittle. It's very, very hard, but very, very brittle. And I've read old American logger accounts, you know, they say that when they actually chop some of these monsters down, the impact and the shock of the trees hitting the ground makes the wood explode. And some of these trees came down so hard that the wood literally fragmented, exploded, and they could use it for little else than pencils, really, which is, well, something quite tragic about that, really.
This area uses a subtle combination of wood sensations, coffee bean-coloured mahogany cabinets, icy smooth to the touch birch floorboards, an oily, sweetly scented pine cigar box, a perfectly crafted, smooth walnut coffee table, shiny enough to see your reflection in it. This is a quiet symphony of wood.
You can hear the wood for the trees because you're ingrained in a fibrous edition of the Night Air.
Driving south on Highway 27, I stopped the car when we saw a broken-down sign made of long wooden sticks, forming the words, Tom Gaskins, Cypress Knee Museum.
Are you Mr. Gaskin?
Mr. Gaskins himself is seated in a shady palm grove by his workshop. When he gets up from his chair, hand-carved from a cypress log, he looks like a bit of the tree detaching from itself.
If you put a timber house together, which is a valuable and beautiful material, you're bound to put it together in such a way that it can come apart again just as easily and be reused perhaps many times over hundreds of years.
Inside, floor-to-ceiling glass cases were filled with what appeared to be small wooden sculptures.
What's all this, then?
Cypress knees.
I think this one looks like a volcano.
Anytime you look out at a cypress swamp, you'll see the knees, pointy wooden humps poking a foot or two up out of the water.
A seal.
They're part of the root system of the cypress tree, but they seem to want to be something else. Monks or rocket ships, weeping faces, or clasped hands.
Oh, I think that looks like, a teepee, if you are think about it.
Still feed the animal. Animal finger on the phone. Curve around corners. Open arms, close
arms. Entrepreneurs would cut them and boil them to strip the bark, leaving just the inner core, smooth, like coffee ice cream, melted and refrozen into sculpture.
Natural art, that's what it is.
To be accurate about it, some knees are simple humps with no distinguishing features. But the knees that have suffered some kind of damage heal over in surprising ways. It is the damage that gives them their character.
They get hurt during a hurricane, millions of limbs fall, and wherever the bark's broken, they heal over.
And I do work almost exclusively in Australian hardwoods. I mean, I like working with them, and I admire their qualities. I mean, they are sort of hard and greasy and resist glue and finish and stuff like that, but they're also, you know, incredibly tough and old and dense, and I do like them. I mean, you have to impose your will on it. You have to actually really make it do what you want it to, twist it into shape and make it work. And I think that's how they build a lot of these old houses.
I can show you knees out here that I've been working on for over 50 years.
Can you?
Come on out here. I'll just walk ahead and hit.
Some of the knees have been acted upon not just by natural forces, but by Mr. Gaskins himself. This garden contains his experiments. There are knees with metal pipes embedded in them, one with a horseshoe, even a telephone receiver, and one wildly contorted knee with tumorous lumps all over it and a sign that says, result of yearly damage since 1939.
See that one right there with all those out like that?
Yes.
Well, not to do that, I just cut it. I hurt it, and it'd heal over. And when it healed over, I'd cut again.
Looks like a big block of wood.
It is a big block of wood, but now it's your big block of wood.
Thank you. I was just saying last night I don't have enough big blocks of wood.
Now, my builder friends and I tend to use recycled timber almost predominantly because...
That block of wood is more than just a block of wood?
Absolutely. I believe it with my entire heart.
Not only is it really good timber, but it means that you're not cutting the forests.
Solitary, fat eucalypts lorded it over hot paddocks, trunks glowing like aluminium at dusk.
In Quebec, Canada, Maison Goulet has a stone base and is strengthened by two stone chimneys. Conversely, the interior is completely covered with wood panels, creating incredible warmth.
A sweet, woody funk.
The panels lead upwards to double-height ceilings, reaching upward like the trees that surround the house.
The beauty of this tree lies in the smooth, clean-looking bark.
The bark on these trees is so spongy and sort of hollow and fibrous that it sounds like a drum. As the rope sort of bangs against it, really does resonate, as you can probably hear. Some of these branches are dead and hollow, they sound like drums.
Whether it's roses or trees or shrubs, you go in and you take away the dead wood that's there. And you can see both branches that have died in here.
I wouldn't say we were confident, but I was surprised how well we were coping. And then suddenly that all changed. Suddenly a huge wind came up and it was very noisy. It was like a roar. The line of conifer trees which bounded the property next door, which you can see from where we're standing, almost exploded, and there was a great roar and a great wall of flame, and the wind blew the sparks from those trees onto our property and ignited lots of trees and ultimately the deck and some timber steps on our property.
Did you continue to fight the fire at that stage?
Brilliant red cinnamon-coloured bark, and with low winter sun, or when it's had a bit of rain on it, it really does glow as if it's on fire.
Everyone get a roll up newspaper, setting on fire and put it.
The life cycle of these trees is really quite amazing. Where they grow in Southern California, you get many forest fires come through the forest there.
Then the fires came through and they burnt all the houses in our little community down in our group. All five are lost.
The bark of the giant redwood, it's like asbestos, it simply won't burn. So the fires lick around the base of the tree.
Reasonably big sections of hardwood are incredibly difficult to ignite.
They can't get through to the living wood.
So hardwood is actually not a bad fire material at all.
Is well browned, so we'll just snip away at that. But you can also see other branches which aren't as full of green life as some of the others. And this is on its way out.
Off the tree where I am, I can see the shadow racing up the trunk ahead of me, up above. The whole tree is like a sundial. Amazing. Oh, I can't wait to get up there in the morning. Okay. All set. I'll see you in the morning.
The premise behind the building of this treehouse is to inject new life into a dead oak tree, which can now only offer its skeleton.
I like oak myself. That's what I have in my bedroom. How about you, Jimmy? You an oak man?
Oak's nice.
The tree becomes the pillar that holds up a place of refuge, of tales and long-lost sensations.
And they have actually used wood.
Wood.
In a very creative and innovative way.
In time, the newly planted elm tree beside the treehouse will grow branches towards and around it. Blossoms and flowers will cover it with colour, smell and new life. The birds are already building their nests in it. A swing is hanging from one of the branches.
Well, good morning. It's coming up to 6:15 in the morning. And I've been woken up by a fantastic dawn chorus. Absolutely amazing. To hear a dawn chorus up in the canopy, I'm looking out through the branches of Goliath here and I'm surrounded by this temperate woodland. But sort of jutting up through the temperate woodland are several other conifers. We've got a couple of western hemlocks, there's Douglas fir, there's a Sitka spruce that I can see. And on the top, on the very tip top of almost every single one, is a bird calling. Each bird that's holding a territory seems to have its own little songpost perched right on the top of these tallest of trees. And they're just singing their hearts out, it's fantastic. There you go, there's that's a greater spotted woodpecker drumming. That's fantastic, isn't it? I think you must be about 50 metres away. And I'm guessing he's in the top of an oak tree.
He's a craftsman. He loves Australian timbers and can talk about their properties in rare detail.
But Madgandabuka is part of the Nyimba or Nyapa way of speaking, and it's part of my country, my mum's country. And the clan group that actually wandered around this area, they call them the statue people, the stone people. The traditional name is the Karakiyali mob. And I'm no doubt there would have been trade across the continent. There's stuff that we found at Kolgoa, even up at Sturt National Parks, that actually come from the desert. For people who live on the river, they would want some sort of wood that's going to be nice and tough for them to do things. And I reckon the mulga and the gidgee wood, which is all on the platter, and also on the floodplain, but I think more abundance in a place like this, that'd be one thing that I can think that it would trade.
There is an indigenous culture of using wood and wood products in Tasmania, and that's only just starting to be recognised. For instance, of crafting canoes from stringy bark and other kinds of bark. Those wooden products and wooden sticks and spears were very much a part of Tasmanian Aboriginal heritage.
Because on the river, it's floodplain. And probably on the floodplain, they'll probably trade something like maybe a coolamin, because coolabah trees make coolamins out of coolabah trees. Also, little bags to carry out of bulrushes and that sort of stuff. So there'll be a lot of trade and a lot of talk.
My eye had been caught by a delicately framed chair of ebonized wood.
Oh, that was on the west coast of Japan. A friend and I visited this temple and it was down a long, wonderful approach with, it had been raining, all the stones were wet and reflecting, and it was in a forest of cryptomeria, enormous trees, you know, hundreds of feet high, 150 feet,
that I immediately recognised as one of William Morris's Sussex chairs of the 1860s.
And he described to us, in fact, how this building site was occupied by this giant tree.
Its smoothly figured wood, rush-matted seat and tall, upright stance makes it a reassuring chair in which to sit, and it remains my most treasured piece of furniture.
And he said that every piece of timber in that building was taken from that tree.
Something about the splay of its arms and the turned work on its legs set it apart from the ordinary.
Four or six timbers meeting in different directions at once, every column, all the main big beams, then down to the finer rafters, and then down to the finest battening of the timber in their delicate paper screens and their shoji. Everything was taken from that tree, and the ceilings were made from thin veneers which were cut from flitches of timber, and the order of their cutting was kept, and when they were placed out in the ceiling, this order was kept, so you saw the whole order of the log. And he said, so you see, we lost the tree, but in a way we've given it another life.
And it's the oil that actually produces the scent of the wood.
Obviously, people enjoy the appearance of a beautiful wood grain, and also, I mean, I love this, the feel of it to the hand.
Absolutely.
But wooden objects can also smell beautiful.
It has this great fragrance to it as well, which comes off the bark, but it also comes off the foliage and off the cones. And on a really warm day, you get this tremendous fragrance, which is sort of resinous, but it's quite aromatic as well. It's quite fruity almost, quite citrusy.
So as kids, we used to sneak downstairs and go and watch my father make his wooden aeroplanes and just smell the glue and smell the wood or the balsa wood.
So that's it. I'm 1 metre, so what's that? About 3 feet away from the tip-top of one of the tallest trees in Britain. And I've got a little ritual. The way I celebrate getting to the top of a tree like this is to plug myself into my iPod and listen to a bit of classical music. And there's one particular track which I think epitomises a tree like Goliath. That's a piece of music by Bach. It's a cello prelude. And in my mind, if there was ever a piece of music that epitomised a tree like Goliath, it's this one. It's very, very peaceful, very serene. There's a couple of buzzards which have just caught the first thermals of the day. I guess that's it, really. Time to head down. Thank you, tree. Thank you, Goliath. I certainly hope it's not the last time I'm going to be able to climb this tree. What a treat. What an absolute treat.
It's you. You are a block of wood.
I'm a block of wood?
Yeah.
This has been a construction in the night air, made entirely from wood. The producer, audio woodsman, and carpenter was James Viver. Thanks to John Jacobs for additional varnishing and polishing. For links and details, you can go to abc.net.au/rn/nightair, where you can have your say and download our shows in Sustainable Plantation Hi-Fi Stereo. I'm the gnarled old evergreen, Brent Clough, and stick with your handcrafted network, ABC Radio National.